Chapter 5. Again he slapped his leg with the book, and Jukes opened his mouth, but said nothing. Running to get behind the weather. Do you understand that, Mr. Jukes? It's the maddest thing, ejaculated Captain McWhirr, with pauses, gazing at the floor profoundly. Who would think an old woman had been writing this? It passes me. If that thing means anything useful, then it means that I should at once alter the course away to the devil somewhere, and come booming down on Fuchao from the northward at the tail of this dirty weather that's supposed to be knocking about in our way. From the north. Do you understand, Mr. Jukes? 300 extra miles to the distance, and a pretty coal bill to show. I couldn't bring myself to do that, if every word in there was gospel truth, Mr. Jukes. Don't you expect me? Dot and Jukes, silent, marveled at this display of feeling and loquacity. But the truth is that you don't know, if the fellow is right, anyhow. How can you tell what a gale is made of till you get it? He isn't aboard here, is he? Very well. Here he says that the center of them things bears 8 points off the wind, but we haven't got any wind, for all the barometer falling. Where's his center now? We will get the wind presently, mumbled Jukes. Let it come, then, said Captain McWhirr, with dignified indignation. Tis only to let you see, Mr. Jukes, that you don't find everything in books. All these rules for dodging breezes and circumventing the winds of heaven, Mr. Jukes, seem to me the maddest thing, when you come to look at it sensibly. He raised his eyes, saw Jukes gazing at him dubiously, and tried to illustrate his meaning. About as queer as your extraordinary notion of dodging the ship head to sea, for I don't know how long, to make the Chinaman comfortable. Whereas all we've got to do is to take them to Fuchao, being timed to get there before noon on Friday. If the weather delays me very well, there's your logbook to talk straight about the weather. But suppose I went swinging off my course, and came in 2 days late, and they asked me, where have you been all that time, Captain? What could I say to that? Went around to dodge the bad weather, I would say. It must have been damn bad, they would say. Don't know, I would have to say. I've dodged clear of it. See that, Jukes? I have been thinking it all out this afternoon. He looked up again in his unseeing, unimaginative way. No one had ever heard him say so much at one time. Jukes, with his arms open in the doorway, was like a man invited to behold a miracle. Unbounded wonder was the intellectual meaning of his eye, while incredulity was seated in his whole countenance. A gale is a gale, Mr. Jukes, resumed the captain, and a full-powered steamship has got to face it. There's just so much dirty weather knocking about the world, and the proper thing is to go through it with none of what old Captain Wilson of the Melita calls storm strategy. The other day ashore I heard him hold forth about it to a lot of shipmasters who came in and sat at a table next to mine. It seemed to me the greatest nonsense. He was telling them how a terrific gale, so that it never came nearer than 50 miles to him. A neat piece of headwork he called it. How he knew there was a terrific gale 50 miles off beats me altogether. It was like listening to a crazy man. I would have thought Captain Wilson was old enough to know better. Captain McWhirr ceased for a moment, then said, it's your watch below, Mr. Jukes. Jukes came to himself with a start. Yes, sir. Leave orders to call me at the slightest change, said the captain. He reached up to put the book away, and tucked his legs upon the couch. Hut the door, so that it don't fly open, will you? I can't stand a door banging. They've put a lot of rubbishy locks into this ship, I must say. Captain McWhirr closed his eyes. He did so to rest himself. He was tired, and he experienced that state of mental vacuity which comes at the end of an exhaustive discussion that has liberated some belief matured in the course of meditative years. He had indeed been making his confession of faith, had he only known it, and its effect was to make Jukes, on the other side of the door, stand scratching his head for a good while. Captain McWhirr opened his eyes. He thought he must have been asleep. What was that loud noise? Wind? Why had he not been called? The lamp wriggled in its gimbals, the barometer swung in circles, the table altered its slant every moment. A pair of limp sea boots with collapsed tops went sliding past the couch. He put out his hand instantly and captured one. Jukes' face appeared in a crack of the door. Only his face, very red, with staring eyes. The flame of the lamp leaped, a piece of paper flew up, a rush of air enveloped Captain McWhirr. Beginning to draw on the boot, he directed an expectant gaze at Jukes' swollen, excited features. Came on like this, shouted Jukes, 5 minutes ago. Dot dot all of a sudden. The head disappeared with a bang, and a heavy splash and patter of drops swept past the closed door, as if a pailful of melted lead had been flung against the house. A whistling could be heard now upon the deep vibrating noise outside. The stuffy chart room seemed as full of drafts as a shed. Captain McWhirr collared the other sea boot on its violent passage along the floor. He was not flustered, but he could not find at once the opening for inserting his foot. The shoes he had flung off were scurrying from end to end of the cabin, gambolling playfully over each other like puppies. As soon as he stood up, he kicked at them viciously, but without effect. He threw himself into the attitude of a lunging fencer to reach after his oilskin coat. And afterwards he staggered all over the confined space, while he jerked himself into it. Very grave, straddling his legs far apart, and stretching his neck, he started to tie deliberately the strings of his sou'wester under his chin, with thick fingers that trembled slightly. He went through all the movements of a woman putting on her bonnet before a glass, with a strained, listening attention, as though he had expected every moment to hear the shout of his name in the confused clamor that had suddenly beset his ship. Its interest filled his ears while he was getting ready to go out and confront whatever it might mean. It was tumultuous and very loud, made up of the rush of the wind, the crashes of the sea, with that prolonged deep vibration of the air, like the roll of an immense and remote drum beating the charge of the gale. He stood for a moment in the light of the lamp, thick, clumsy, shapeless in his panoply of combat, vigilant and red-faced. There's a lot of weight in this, he muttered. As soon as he attempted to open the door, the wind caught it. Clinging to the handle, he was dragged out over the doorstep, and at once found himself engaged with the wind in a sort of personal scuffle whose object was the shutting of that door. At the last moment a tongue of air scurried in, and licked out the flame of the lamp. Ahead of the ship he perceived a great darkness lying upon a multitude of white flashes. On the starboard beam a few amazing stars drooped, dim and fitful, above an immense waste of broken seas, as if seen through a mad drift of smoke. On the bridge a knot of men, indistinct and toiling, were making great efforts in the light of the wheelhouse windows that shone mistily on their heads and backs. Suddenly darkness closed upon one pane, then on another. The voices of the lost group reached him after the manner of men's voices in a gale, in shreds and fragments of forlorn shouting snatched past the ear. All at once Jukes appeared at his side, yelling, with his head down. Watch put in wheelhouse shutters glass afraid blow in. Jukes heard his commander upbraiding. This come anything warning call me. He tried to explain, with the uproar pressing on his lips. Light air remained bridge sudden northeast could turn thought you sure here. They had gained the shelter of the weather cloth, and could converse with raised voices, as people quarrel. I got the hands along to cover up all the ventilators. Good job I had remained on deck. I didn't think you would be asleep, and so... Dot dot what did you say, sir? What? Nothing, cried Captain McWhirr. Said all right. By all the powers. We've got it this time, observed Jukes in a howl. You haven't altered our course? Inquired Captain McWhirr, straining his voice. No, sir. Certainly not. Wind came out right ahead. And here comes the head sea. A plunge of the ship ended in a shock, as if he had landed her forefoot upon something solid. After a moment of stillness, a lofty flight of sprays drove hard with the wind upon their faces. Keep her at it, as long as we can, shouted Captain McWhirr. Before Jukes had squeezed the salt water out of his eyes, all the stars had disappeared. 3. Jukes was as ready a man as any half dozen young mates that may be caught by casting a net upon the waters, and though he had been somewhat taken aback by the startling viciousness of the first squall, he had pulled himself together on the instant, had called out the hands, and had rushed them along to secure such openings about the deck as had not been already battened down earlier in the evening. Shouting in his fresh, stentorian voice, "Jump, boys, and bear a hand," he led in the work, telling himself the while that he had just expected this. But at the same time he was growing aware that this was rather more than he had expected. From the first stir of the air felt on his cheek, the gale seemed to take upon itself the accumulated impetus of an avalanche. Heavy sprays enveloped the Nan Shan from stem to stern, and instantly in the midst of her regular rolling she began to jerk and plunge as though he had gone mad with fright. Jukes thought, this is no joke. While he was exchanging explanatory yells with his captain, a sudden lowering of the darkness came upon the night, falling before their vision like something palpable. It was as if the masked lights of the world had been turned down. Jukes was uncritically glad to have his captain at hand. It relieved him, as though that man had, by simply coming on deck, taken most of the gale's weight upon his shoulders. Such is the prestige, the privilege, and the burden of command. Captain McWhirr could expect no relief of that sort from anyone on Earth. Such is the loneliness of command. He was trying to see, with that watchful manner of a seaman who stares into the wind's eye, as if into the eye of an adversary, to penetrate the hidden intention and guess the aim and force of the thrust. The strong wind swept at him out of a vast obscurity. He felt under his feet the uneasiness of his ship, and he could not even discern the shadow of her shape. He wished it were not so, and very still he waited, feeling stricken by a blind man's helplessness. To be silent was natural to him, dark or shine. Jukes, at his elbow, made himself heard yelling cheerily in the gusts, "We must have got the worst of it at once, sir." A faint burst of lightning quivered all round, as if flashed into a cavern into a black and secret chamber of the sea, with a floor of foaming crests. It unveiled for a sinister, fluttering moment a ragged mass of clouds hanging low, the lurch of the long outlines of the ship, the black figures of men caught on the bridge, heads forward, as if petrified in the act of budding. The darkness palpitated down upon all this, and then the real thing came at last. It was something formidable and swift, like the sudden smashing of a vial of wrath. It seemed to explode all round the ship with an overpowering concussion, and a rush of great waters, as if an immense dam had been blown up to windward. In an instant the men lost touch of each other. This is the disintegrating power of a great wind. It isolates one from one's kind. An earthquake, a landslip, an avalanche, overtake a man incidentally, as it were without passion. A furious gale attacks him like a personal enemy, tries to grasp his limbs, fastens upon his mind, seeks to rout his very spirit out of him. Jukes was driven away from his commander. He fancied himself whirled a great distance through the air. Everything disappeared even, for a moment, his power of thinking, but his hand had found one of the rail stanchions. His distress was by no means alleviated by an inclination to disbelieve the reality of this experience. Though young, he had seen some bad weather, and had never doubted his ability to imagine the worst, but this was so much beyond his powers of fancy, that it appeared incompatible with the existence of any ship whatever. he would have been incredulous about himself in the same way, perhaps, had he not been so harassed by the necessity of exerting a wrestling effort against a force trying to tear him away from his hold. Moreover, the conviction of not being utterly destroyed returned to him through the sensations of being half drowned, bestially shaken, and partly choked. It seemed to him, he remained there precariously alone with the stanchion for a long, long time. The rain poured on him, flowed, drove in sheets. He breathed in gasps, and sometimes the water he swallowed was fresh and sometimes it was salt. For the most part he kept his eyes shut tight, as if suspecting his sight might be destroyed in the immense flurry of the elements. When he ventured to blink hastily, he derived some moral support from the green gleam of the starboard light shining feebly upon the flight of rain and sprays. He was actually looking at it, when its ray fell upon the uprearing sea which put it out. He saw the head of the wave topple over, adding the might of its crash to the tremendous uproar raging around him, and almost at the same instant the stanchion was wrenched away from his embracing arms. After a crushing thump on his back he found himself suddenly afloat and borne upwards. His first irresistible notion was that the whole China Sea had climbed on the bridge. Then, more sanely, he concluded himself gone overboard. All the time he was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.